Thanks, Mark and Mike. As one of the old guys in the room, I'd like to give some of the historical perspective on some of the original cow efficiency research. And I am going to talk. There we go. I am going to talk mostly about the Wisconsin studies that Mike referenced, but also some of the other older cow efficiency literature. This quote was already presented in one of the first talks this morning from Harlan Ritchie back in 1995 at the BIF meeting. And Harlan said, "The often feed cows indeed in the loose feet. I've searched for her for more than 20 years and have come up empty handed, but I believe I'm getting close." So almost 20 years later, we're still talking about cow efficiency and trying to figure out how to measure, how to decide what is an efficient feed cow. So the papers that Mike just talked about were based on the postdoc research that I did at the University of Wisconsin back in the early 1980s. Ed Hauser did a whole series of experiments starting way back in the 1950s where he measured individual feed intake on cows and on their calves. So there were data collected between 1953 and 1980 from three experiments in the 1950s and then two experiments in the 1960s. And those were on twin females, twin cows, twin heifers when they were purchased, twin cows, both identical and paternal twins, and then some crossbred females in a 1974 experiment that were singles, not twins. So my job as a young PhD graduate going into my postdoc was trying to figure out how to make some sense out of all these data and to use those individual feeding up with measures of cow efficiency and what the factors affecting cow efficiency. Larry Tunda from U.S. Mark had a lot of input into this. He gave a lot of good thoughts in terms of how to go about doing this. So we actually did what I call two different analyses here, analysis one and analysis two. Analysis one included dams that mean at least one calf, and analysis two included cows that mean three calves. At most, they were given the opportunity the three 1950s experiments, those data were only included in the second analysis because in those data sets we only had feed consumption available for the cows that completed three lactations. Just to give you some idea of the number of cows involved in these experiments, in the three 1950s experiments, there were six, eight, and eight cows. I'll show you in a minute, those were all herders. A fairly small number. In 64 and 69, there were 37 and 45 cows. In 1974, there were 56 cows in analysis one. And then a few less than that actually completed all three lactations. They had three cows and completed three lactations and were included in analysis two. So back in the 50s, those were all purebred herpers, great red herper cows. In the 64 experiment, they were mostly all herpers. There was one twin study, the Herford Guernsey, Herford Shorthorn, Herford Holstein, and Herford Brown Swiss. 69 experiment, they were mostly herpers and Holstein. There were 17 herpers, 24 Holstein cows, two Herford Shorthorns, two Herford Charolais. And then in the 74 experiment, they were all Holstein crossbreds. 14 Herford Holstein, 14 Angus Holstein, 15 Simmental Holstein, and 13 Fenian Holstein crossbreds. Given that these experiments were done in Wisconsin, a big dairy state, they had a lot of interest in how to utilize those Holstein dairy cows, and the city is supposed to be used in that also to produce beef. The females were all herders, young ages, anywhere from 8 to 224 days of age. They were randomly assigned to self-feeders, where then they were tied twice daily. In the 53 and 54 and 59 experiments, there were different diets, but the same diet was fed to all females within a group. The diet was the same within each of those three different experiments. And then in the 64, 69, and 74 experiments, the females were assigned to either a high or a low energy diet, where the high energy diet consisted of chopped, mixed hay, and concentrate, and the low energy diet consisted of just chopped. So individual feed consumption was measured on these heifers and then they got 5 years of data back to the end of the experiment for a given calf. Calves received fruit feed beginning at 60 days of age in the 50s experiments and at 28 days of age in the 60s and 74 experiments. They measured ad libitum feed consumption, both pre and post feeding, on the project. So they had individual feed intakes on cows and then individual feed intakes on the project. Weaning weights were adjusted to the 240-day of age basis. Previous research by Carpenter and Marshall and Wagner has shown that cows feeding male calves tend to be more efficient than those of the female calf. So the progeny weaning weights and feed consumption were adjusted for sex using additive adjustment factors. The twin females were bred and served estrus after 15 months of age, and then at each succeeding estrus after that. The crossbred females that were bought in 1974 were bred at first detected estrus, or puberty, and then at each subsequent estrus after that. Following each calf, all dams were bred at first estrus and at each subsequent estrus. So these experiments were a little bit different in that we had year-round calving. Cow calved, so she came back into heat, she was bred again. So rather than the traditional yearly calving system, I think Dr. Hauser's idea was he didn't want to limit the cows. He wanted to let the cows show us what they could do. So rather than putting them on a yearly calving system as we would normally do, they were bred at each other. As soon as they calved, once they came to heat, they were bred back right away. Just to show the breed composition in the three experiments in the 1950s, those were all, these are the breed of sires. I showed you the breed of cows. These are sires that were bred to. In the 50s, they were all bred to Hereford bulls. In 64, they were bred to Polled Herefords. In 69, the Holstein cows were, or the Hereford cows were mated to Holsteins, and the Holstein cows were mated to Hereford bulls. In 74, Jersey bulls were used to produce the first parity calves, and Charolais bulls were used to produce the second and third parity calves. They measured milk production on these cows. The milk production was estimated monthly in each lactation, either by machine or hand milk. So as I said, cow efficiency was measured using two approaches. The first was a life cycle approach, and then the second was an actual life cycle approach for cows that we breed calves. In the first analysis, then the life cycle cow efficiency was expressed as the ratio of output to input. Output included weaning weights of all the progeny, and salvage value of the dams, and inputs included feed consumption of all progeny and the dams. So I call that R1 for ratio 1 as our first measure of life cycle efficiency. So in the numerator, we have the sum of the weaning weights, the progeny weights, and the weaning weights, and then also the sum of the dam weights, maybe that weaning of the dams. And in the denominator, we have the sum of the progeny feed intakes and the sum of the dam feed. Those little letters in front there, the K sub I and L sub I and N sub I and N sub I, were weighting factors that were based on the age distribution of the cow and the percent calf crop in a theoretical herd consisting of 100 cows and 20-year-old replacement cattle. So those different outputs and inputs were weighted based on the age distribution of the cow herd and percent calf crop. That 0.5714 in front of the dam weights was an attempt to get out the salvage value of the cull cows. That was the ratio of price per pound for cull cows to price per pound for feeder cows at that point in time back when we were doing this analysis. So that measure of efficiency was a measure of kilograms of weaning weight equivalent of feed produced per megacalorie of metabolizable energy consumed. Feed consumption was expressed as megacalories of energy. So differences in that measure of feed efficiency could be due to differences in fertility, weaning weight of progeny, salvage weight of dams, feed consumption of progeny, and feed consumption of dams. We have a second measure of efficiency, which I call R2, the same as R1, except we left out salvage value. So we did not have the weight of the cows in the numerator there. We didn't include salvage value in that efficiency. Second analysis was an actual R4, the fourth measure of efficiency was the same as R3, except that we did not include salvage value available. So the variation associated with reproduction rate and past survival were not included in those two measures of efficiency. Okay, so in the 64, 69, and 74 experiments, I said we had a high and low energy diet. Keeping in mind that efficiency here is output over input, so the higher number is better. The higher numbers indicate a town with better efficiency. So if you go across the row there, comparing 1964 low versus 1964 high, 1969 low versus 1969 high, in each case, we see there that the cows on the low energy diet were more efficient than those on the high energy diet. Year diet differences were significant for three out of the four measures. They were not significant for R3. The cows on the low energy diet were a little more efficient than those on the high energy diet. In the 1974 experiment, there was really no difference, no significant difference between cows on the high and low energy diet. So there did not seem to be any advantage to feeding dams in excess of their energy requirements. Cows on the high energy diet did have greater salvage value, they were heavier, had greater salvage value, but they did not mean calves of sufficient size to offset their own increased metabolized energy. Now, I'm going to talk mostly here today about weaning weight output, cow efficiency based on weaning weights. We did also have data at the slaughter endpoint. We had slaughter weights, we had carcass weights, and we had weight trim wholesale cuts. And we also looked at efficiency using those as outputs. If we use those as measures of outputs instead of feeding weight, we still reach the same conclusion that cows on the low energy diet generally have lifetime efficiency greater than or equal to those on the high energy diet. So looking at a few of the other studies from back in those days, about 1980, found that cows that were fed a diet that provided 10% more energy than required to produce a normal growth curve produce more milk, and weaned heavier calves and cows fed at a level to be at normal growth, but the advantage was not great enough to offset the greater feed consumption by the dams on the higher energy level. So again, no advantage to feeding a higher energy diet to the cows. The Holloway et al., 1975, found that level of litter supplement of dams generally did not affect the efficiency of conversion of digestible energy intake by the dam or by dam and progeny into weaning weights of the progeny. So, again, the literature seems to indicate no advantage to feeding a higher energy diet to those cats. Looking at the breed group effects here for the 1964 and 1969 experiments, for each of the four measures of efficiency, the Herford beef cows, Herford beef cross cows, had the highest efficiencies there, looking at the R1.0273, followed by Herefords, followed by Hereford dairy, and then by Holstein. And that ranking, again, was the same across all four measures. Hereford beef, followed by Hereford, Hereford dairy, and then Holstein. So in these experiments, the Holstein cows were least efficient, even though they produced progeny with heavier weaning weights and lower creek feed consumptions, and had greater sounding value than the other. The low efficiency ratios of the Holstein cows were associated with their own large metabolizable. Now, it might have been that the efficiency of the Holstein cows would have been better if they had been made into a larger breed of sire. We produced larger progeny, but could have made more use of their milk production potential. These Holstein cows were made into Hereford bulls, so possibly if they'd been made into some larger breed of bull, maybe those cows made more use of the milk production potential of the Holstein cow, and their efficiency might have improved. In this scenario, in these experiments, the Holstein were the least efficient. When we looked at the slaughter weight output, carcass weights, and trim wholesale cut weights, the Herefords or Hereford beef dams, again, were still most efficient to the harvest endpoint, followed by Hereford dairy and Holstein cattle. Some of the other literature from the time, Holloway found no significant differences in the ability of Herford, Herford Holstein, or Holstein dams, made in the Angus of Charlet sires, with the first and second The 1974 experiment, the breed differences were not statistically different. Numerically, the Hereford Holsteins had the highest efficiency ratios, followed by Simmental Holstein, Angus Holstein, and Kenina Holstein. But statistically, those differences among those four different breed groups of cows were not significant. The progeny of Simmental Holstein and Kenina Holstein dams were most efficient in the conversion of feeding to post-weaning gain. So we looked at feed intake prior to weaning. We also had post-weaning feed intake on the calves. And the progeny now, the Simmental Holsteins and Kenina Holsteins are most efficient during the post-weaning period, that is, during the progeny of the calves. So when we put together the pre-weaning period and post-weaning, we got very similar life cycle and actual lifetime efficiencies for the 74 breed groups. Carpenter et al. In the Texas work, the Texas group did a lot of efficiency work back in those days. They found that Charlie cows were slightly more efficient than Hereford cows, and feed efficiency was measured as the ratio of calf weaning weight to feed consumption of the cow and calf during lactation. Marshall and the South Dakota group noted significant breed and dam effects for cow efficiency at weaning, although Angus dams tended to have efficiency ratios compared to those of Charlie or crossbred dams. Wayne Wagner and his PhD work at Colorado State found that breed of dam is not an important source of variation for weaning efficiency of Angus, Hereford, Charlie, and reciprocal cross dams. Bowden in 1980 also found those significant differences in adjustable energy intake of dams or dams plus dams per kilogram of weaning weight of calf for 2-year-old Simmental Angus, Charlie Angus, Hereford Angus, and Jersey Angus dams that were made from red pulled suckers. So, in total, all those different experiments seem to indicate the breed of dam is not a particularly important source of variation in efficiency of straight bred dams or of crossbred dams. Fires of a different breed. Most studies that were not large differences among the breed of dam groups. A number of different reports have discussed the effect of mating small dams to large terminal sire breeds in terms of efficiency of production. Must be a number of different studies there that have addressed that. In the Wisconsin data that I analyzed, mating the Hereford Holstein dams. Small Jersey sires in the first parity to minimize calving difficulty, and then for the larger Charlet sires in subsequent parities to exploit complementarity seem to result in superior biological efficiency. So it seems that there are advantages to calving the cow by mating her to as large a bull as possible within the limitations imposed by calving difficulty in order to improve efficiency. Weaning rate, trying to look at some fertility effects. Weaning rate did have a highly significant effect on life cycle cow efficiency. As the weaning rate increased, those two measures of efficiency increased. Certainly emphasizes the importance of fertility and calf survival. It would be difficult for cows to be efficient if they don't wean the maximum number of calves. They don't wean calves. And looking at the relationship then between efficiency and some of the different component traits, here with the weights of the dams, a dam weight at weaning of first, second, and third calf. The specific numbers are not terribly important, but we just know that those correlations are negative, indicating that in these studies, our analysis indicated that the smaller cows were more efficient, and those were highly significant correlations. So within a breed, these were what we call residual correlations, that is, we accounted for various effects like breed and diet, tried to account for those things in our statistical models. So within a breed, a small cow mated to a large sire could mean a large calf, larger calf relative to her body size, and a cow of the same breed mated to the same sire. And of course, the smaller cows tend to have lower maintenance requirements and lower feed consumption. The correlations with cow weight efficiency within breed or native. Some of the other studies, excellent review by Morris and Wilton back in 1976. Melton et al. In 67 found that within both Herpes and Charlets, small cows were more efficient. Press et al. 69 lighter towns were more efficient when founding value was ignored. Carpenter et al., 72, measured pallet efficiency as the ratio of half meeting weight. The peak consumption of the pallet half during lactation, a trend existed for cows with smaller mature weights to be more efficient. Earl Klosterman, back in 1970, some work in Ohio, found no significant differences in efficiency to weaning among small, medium, and large cows, although the small cows tended to be more efficient. And Marshall et al., 76, found no relationship between cow weight and efficiency. Relationship of cow efficiency with feed intake bands, as you would probably expect, these correlations are negative and significant, many of them highly significant. So the cows that consume less feed were more efficient. Kress et al. Also found that dams that ate less during lactation were more efficient. As Mike mentioned, a lot of these studies just looked at efficiency during the lactation period and not lifetime, life cycle efficiency. Carpenter reported the correlation of minus 0.43 between efficiency and feed consumption during lactation. And Marshall reported a small undesirable correlation between efficiency and cow feeding intake from weaning of one calf to weaning of next calf. Relationship of efficiency with the weights of the calves, the weaning weights of the calves. Within individual parity, so within individual lactations, the correlations were small and positive, but not real strong correlations within individual lactations or parities within with calf weights. But if we saw the calf weights across all three parities, then we did get significant correlations, particularly with life cycle. R1 and R2 correlations of 0.64 and 0.7. So the sum of the progeny weights was more highly correlated with efficiency ratios than the sum of the dam weights, dam feed consumption, or progeny feed consumption. Marshall et al. Reported a large favorable association between weaning weight and efficiency, as did Carpenter et al. So larger weaning weights, greater efficiency. Progeny free feed. Consumption, correlation again between individual parities were positive but small and not significant, except for that one value there, 0.21. But if we summed over the different parities, then we did get positive correlations between the progeny free feed consumption and life cycle efficiency. The ME intake of progeny summed over all parities did have some positive correlations with life cycle. So efficiency actually improved as the pre-feed intake of the progeny. Carpenter, Marshall, and their studies found also small favorable correlations between feed intake of progeny and the efficiency. Relationships with age of puberty and age of calving. Remember, it was only in the 1974 experiments where the heifers were bred at puberty. So in terms of age of puberty, that only includes the females in that experiment. Strong negative correlations, significant correlations with actual lifetime efficiency with R3 and R4, minus 0.55 and minus 0.54. So the heifers that reach puberty at a younger age do become more efficient cows. In terms of age of calving, significant correlations, particularly with life cycle, or with actual lifetime efficiency, with measures that we call R3 and R4. So decreased age of first, second, and third calving did have large favorable relationships, R3 and R4. The cows that reached puberty at an early age and at early ages throughout their lives were most efficient. Weaning rate again, you might expect large positive correlations of weaning rate with life cycle efficiency. Here we have feed intake. 240 days of first calving, and then gain the feed ratio of the heifers from 240 days of first calving. Significant negative correlation between feed intake of the heifers during that time period, and then subsequent cow efficiency of those heifers. Gain the feed ratio, the correlations were positive, not significant except for that one value of 0.32 with the third measure more efficient producers of wheat pigs. The heifers that were more efficient in their own weight gain post-weaning did become more efficient calves. That was also true if they used slaughter weights, carcass weights, and trimmed wholesale cut weights as outputs in addition to wheat weights. Press et al., 1969, also found favorable correlations between feed efficiency from 240 days to 15 months of age and cow efficiency in these five days. So again, I think as Mike talked about, there does seem to be indication that the heifers that are more efficient do become more efficient as calves. Here we have 240-day weight height and weight height ratio of the cows and their correlations then with their subsequent cow efficiency. The correlations were small. They were negative, but small and not statistically significant. So not much relationship between the weight height and weight height ratio. The heifers were 240 days of age with their feed cow efficiency. So those numbers would indicate that those traits would not be real good indicators of subsequent cow efficiency. Hawkins et al., 1965, also did not find a significant relationship between the yearling weight of the heifer and her subsequent calf. Weight and height at first, second, and third calving of the cows. The cow's weight and height at her first, second, and third calving. Those correlations were negative. With weight, they were highly significant. With height, some were significant. Most were significant. Some were highly significant. So again, indicating smaller cows were more efficient, particularly when smaller cows were more efficient even when cow value was included in the efficiency ratio. The size of the correlation was not quite as great when cow salvage value was included. But even if we included cow salvage weight in the equation as output in the numerator, they're still smaller cows and more efficient. Correlations between efficiency estimates and height of calving range from minus 0.15 to minus 0.37. Press et al. Found cow height had only a small association with efficiency. Weight-height ratios, we did not have condition scores on the cows. We did not, of course, have ultrasound measures of body condition at that point in time, so we used weight-height ratio as an indicator of condition. Correlations were negative, highly significant. The weight-height ratio was negatively significantly correlated with efficiency. So cows that were fatter in terms of weight-height ratio were less efficient. The size of those correlations was reduced again somewhat in salvage value of the cow was included in the efficiency ratio. Press et al. Also found that cows with greater weight-height ratios were less efficient. And Marshall et al. Found that more highly conditioned cows tended to wean lighter calves and were less efficient with cow weight. Production were held constant. We also looked at change in weight height ratio during lactation. Those correlations, particularly with actual lifetime efficiency, were positive, and some of those were significant, indicating the cows that gained condition during lactation were actually more efficient. So there was a tendency for the cows that gained condition during lactation to be more efficient. Number of studies in the literature indicated the opposite. Gregory et al., Brinks et al., Todd, Cohen, Mogan all reported negative correlations between pre-weaning average ability of calf and weight gain of dam during lactation. So if the cows were gaining more weight, probably not producing as much milk, and the calves did not gain as much. Press found that cows that gained less weight during lactation were more efficient. Wagner said the cows exhibiting significant positive changes in weight height ratios from the time they entered the study until they weaned their calves were less efficient. And Carpenter found the weight change during lactation was negatively correlated with efficiency. So the cows that gained less were actually more efficient. So some contrasting results between the Wisconsin studies and several of the other studies reported in the literature in terms of gain in body condition. A couple of possible reasons for that. The different results might reflect differences between a cumulative lifetime efficiency, which we measured in the Wisconsin study, and efficiency within individual lactations, which were studied in most other experiments. may have had better rebreeding performance and were more efficient on a lifetime basis. Dams in the Wisconsin study, as I said, also were bred at postpartum estrus, whereas dams in other studies were on a yearly calving season. Whereas in the Wisconsin study, it was a year-round calving program that were spread back as soon as they came back into the after calving. So some differences between the different kinds of studies might have led to those different relationships with gains in this year of lactation. Also, the change in conditions during lactation that we want to maximize biological efficiency might also be related to the milk production levels of the broods involved in the different studies. And in correlation with milk production here in the first, second, and third lactation, correlations not particularly strong with first lactation. They were negative, and most of those were significant. So kind of tended to be negative, but not real strong, generally not significant correlations with milk production. The correlations between 4% fat corrected milk production efficiency tended to be negative. However, the correlations of actual lifetime efficiency with milk production were positive for the 1950 twin cows, with R4 in milk production for second, third lactation, those correlations were 0.59, 0.47, 0.70. So in those Hereford cows in the 1950s experiments, it looks like more milk would have been better. More milk probably is a better cow efficiency in the Hereford's from those experiments back in the 50s. In the 1964 and 69 experiments, the correlations were negative and varied somewhat depending on the breed or the breed combinations in those cows. In those experiments, correlations for Hereford dams were near zero. So the negative from the Holsteins and the Hereford dairy and the Hereford beef dams. So it could have been that the Hereford dairy, Hereford beef, and Holstein dams may have had milk production potential that their progeny did not utilize. Also, the heavier milking breeds have later ages. Age of third calving in the Hereford's was 1,490 days. Age of calving, third calving in the Holstein was 1,552 days. So the heavier milking cows tended to have later ages at calving. The 1974 experiment with the crossbred cows, there were significant negative correlations between milk production and the first lactation. So if you remember in the 74 experiment, so the cows were made through Jersey bulls. So it's possible that those first parenting calves sired by Jersey bulls may not have had enough growth potential to utilize the milk production potential of the Holstein cross dams. So there was a negative relationship between milk production and cow efficiency in the first parenting. But in the second and third lactations in that experiment, the correlations with milk production were near zero. And the second and third calves were out of the Charolais bulls. So those calves out of the Charolais bulls would be expected to be larger, growthier, have more growth potential, and perhaps make better use of the milk production that those Holstein cross cows made available. So whether the relationship between milk production and efficiency is positive or negative or zero, that kind of depends on the particular breed combinations, whether we want more milk or less milk, right in terms of milk production. Kraus, Carpenter, Marshall all reported greater efficiency in heavier milking cows, whereas Holloway found no significant differences in efficiency among Hereford Holstein and Hereford Holstein cows. KC, Davis et al., 1994, Mike Tess's group, concluded that for northern range production systems, breed groups of moderate mature size and milk production would be more profitable than extreme types growth in milk production. So it seems that increased milk production is only desirable if extra milk can actually be consumed by the calves and converted into weaning weights of sufficient magnitude to offset the increased energy intake required by the dams to produce the milk. Richard Wellum, 1972 paper in the Journal of Animal Science, said that if feed resources are fixed, milk production should not exceed the level that prevents sufficient nutrients for successful rebreeding. Dave Nodder et al. 79 said that increases in milk production that reduce feeding weights for cow exposed by decreasing pregnancy rates reduce economic efficiency. And increased milk levels improved biological efficiency, only if they resulted in improved weaning rates. As I said, we also had the three different measures of output at the slaughter endpoint in addition to weaning weights. In these studies, the dams that were efficient in the production of weaning weight were also efficient producers of slaughter weight, carcass weight, and shrimp wholesale cut weight. The correlations among efficiency estimates calculated at the weaning and the slaughter endpoints were 0.88 or above. So very similar efficiency estimates, whether we use weaning weights or carcass weights or slaughter weights or shrimp wholesale cut weights. And the correlations among those three measures or three measures of output at the harvest endpoint were all quite large at 0.93 or above. So they don't, at least in these data, they do not appear to be any serious antagonisms between pre- and post-weaning efficiency. So that systems of production that maximize weaning efficiency